Hello and welcome to IPO Stories, a podcast that explores the tracks to IPOs for companies and their stakeholders.
Through interviews with professionals who have led companies to public markets, we will learn about what it takes to IPO a business, the do's and the don'ts before, during, and after a listing process. I'm Gauthier.
I'm Per, co-founders of Omniscient Investment Management, a Europe-based equity manager. Saudi Arabia has evolved from having 4 IPOs per year 10 years ago to 40 IPOs per year over the last few years. Naif Al-Athal has been in the middle of this evolution as he headed the listings activity at the Saudi Exchange between 2018 and 2023. He's now the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for the Tadawul Group, which owns the Saudi equity market infrastructure, and managed the IPO of the group in 2021. With Naif, we discussed the policy decisions and incentives that have made Saudi Arabia one of the most active IPO markets globally, how going public has affected the strategy of the Tadawul Group, the internationalization of the exchange, and the road ahead for the Saudi capital markets. Before we start, we would like to remind our listeners that our discussion is not financial advice, nor an investment recommendation, nor a solicitation to buy or sell any financial instruments, or an offer for financial services or any other transaction. The information contained in the recording has no contractual value and are destined for an informational purpose only. Omniscient Investment Management and the participants in this podcast may have holdings in the companies being discussed. Naif, thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure's all mine.
Can you start by introducing yourself and explaining a bit your role at Saudi Tadawul Group?
Of course. By trade, I started my life as an investment banker. So my first job was with Morgan Stanley and went through that system, got to experience what it feels like to work for a Wall Street bank. Then, of course, got enthused by the beautiful breeze of the 2030 vision and joined the Saudi Stock Exchange. That was the brand back then. We've, of course, rebranded, and I'll come to that, I'm sure, during the podcast. Joined on a promise to reshape capital markets in the kingdom. And I think I've, as a young Saudi, experienced that full throttle. And it was such a wonderful journey. The program saw us introduce a SME market that financed more than 100 companies, saw us introduce REITs, saw us join international indices as emerging markets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Many achievements that propelled us on the global stage. I carried the title of Chief of Listings at the Saudi Stock Exchange. I've always been in charge of listings and IPOs, so that's my bread and butter. And currently, as we speak, I have moved to the group to try and further elevate our commercial output across the 7 subsidiaries that the group currently owns. That's more or less who I am, Per.
When we first met, it was in 2021, you were managing the IPO process of the Tadawul Group yourself. I was surprised that Tadawul was actually not listed before 2021. You usually have exchanges are usually listed quite early, right, to promote the exchange. So why the timing of 2021?
I think, you know, the desire was always there. And we as an organization felt like we were IPO ready 6, 7, 8 years ago when we had a fantastic growth story that we wanted to tell our investors. Back then, we still have more growth stories to tell in the future. But as I'm sure you understand, Per, you know, there's always this dilemma of shareholder and the shareholder's decision. And back then, and we still are, of course, predominantly owned by the public investment fund, Sovereign Wealth Fund in the kingdom. And the PIF, as they are known, had a very, very busy pipeline of IPOs and priorities. And we've seen many government, semi-government assets being, you know, taken public. And we had to wait for the right moment for the Saudi Tadawul Group. And I think it came into our advantage, Per, to be very honest. Timing was perfect. It helped us, you know, that whole group restructure helped us tremendously. So if we went public 6, 7 years ago, we would have been a stock exchange that had different capabilities represented as departments, divisions within that stock exchange. But because of the delay, that enabled us to formulate a group, which is called the Saudi Tadawul Group. The Saudi Tadawul Group then owned the Saudi Exchange, Idaa, which is our depository center, Muqassa, which is our clearinghouse, Wamud, which is our tech innovation arm. And that whole restructure helped us put together a equity story that has, thankfully, knock on wood, helped us achieve and execute a fantastic IPO and a post-market performance, the stock that has been very resilient.
And what was the strategic rationale for the IPO at the time in terms of the business of the group?
So I think there's a couple of angles, and you've touched on one. We wanted to lead by example. So we've always spoke to corporates in the kingdom, especially family businesses. And the number one question was from them, you're asking us to go public. Why aren't you public? That question was a little bit difficult. So I just wanted to get that question out of the way. And so that was the first, I would say, first reason we went public. Of course, not the main reason. There's always more complex, more strategic reasons. But we wanted to lead by example. We wanted our IPO to become a golden standard of how IPOs are done in the kingdom. Of course, I had a very biased opinion being part of the team that led that IPO within the organization. I think we've done a good job in achieving that. Actually, one of the pillars that IPO stood for, it was, I'm quoting some of the, I would say, government instructions and the narrative that came with the IPO is, execute the IPO with the highest level of transparency. And transparency was a very key word for us. It was something that we've tried to achieve across all the facets of us going public. On the contrary, and more importantly, we wanted to, of course, continue to evolve as an organization. And we had an unbelievable growth story that we wanted to share with the public audience. And I think that growth story and that potential that the Saudi Tadawul Group is very much appreciated by the local and the international investment scene. And of course, our shareholder had different objectives. And those objectives are, you know, not a secret. It's very well known. And the PIF has been financing itself in the past several years, and you've seen, I would say, a lot of those funds invested in the growth of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is always great to see.
You worked with both global and local banks in the IPO process. Yourself, you came from Morgan Stanley, as you said. Did your perception of the process itself evolve as you were working through it?
Yeah, I think over the last 8 years, the IPO process, and especially from the regulatory side, evolved tremendously. And evolved in a fantastic way. And I think the spirit of that evolvement was around the autonomy of decision making. In the past, regulators and, you know, with the introduction of listing rules recently, the Saudi Tadawul Group became some sort of a regulator itself. But if you go in towards the past, I would say the past meaning 8, 9, 10 years ago, a lot of the decision making was in the hands of the regulators. Whereas if you look at it today, it's more or less in the hands of corporates. And of course, corporates rely on the advice that they get from other financial advisors, and of course, the feedback they get from their investors. But nonetheless, the autonomy of that decision-making very much lies in the hands of the corporate and how they are guided by the entire ecosystem. I still sit at a very sensitive position to be able to scrutinize investment banks and how they differ from international to local. But what I can definitely say is that we have evolved as a capital market. It was a tremendous learning, very steep learning curve for us. We moved very quickly, which entailed more than 150, 160 IPOs in the last 6 years. And in that, I would say, exponential growth, you know, I would love to salute and hats off to all the financial advisors, whether local or international, that have kept up with us and continued to evolve and continued to be very dynamic in understanding our evolvement as a capital market.
Was the process very intense compared to what you expected?
Going back to the Saudi Tadawul Group IPO, is probably one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had as a person. You know, I always wore a lens of looking at companies, looking at advisors, and having certain expectations. But once you join the other side, or once you become part of the other side, then the view really differs. Once I was part of the other side, what I thought was very challenging was not the process itself, meaning dealing with the regulators, but rather the finer details. The most challenging entity within the entire process are investors and their expectations.
Were you able to figure out what their expectations were?
No, you know, from the beginning of the process, all throughout the PDIE, so from the early stages, all throughout to the allocation itself, you can never win. And you can never feel like you've won. But, you know, what you're trying to actually achieve is to try to maximize value for what you're offering in terms of an equity story. And that was the biggest challenge. So the finer details, every question matters and every answer matters. And you need to be absolutely flawless in how you approach investors, because as much as you think it's a fragmented space, it isn't. These investors are intertwined, and one answer to one investor affects the perception of the entire audience. And that process was, in all honesty, very overwhelming. And I think companies and corporates all over the world need to be absolutely well prepared for that challenge.
It's true that one particular thing about the IPO process is you're not negotiating with a single counterparty. You're negotiating with a mass of investors who are interested, but maybe they're not interested. You're not sure, right? You're not exactly sure about how much they want, what price they're looking at, if they want stability, if they want growth, if they want dividends. There's quite a lot of different expectations. And I think for you particularly, you dealt with international investors and local institutionals, local retail investors who were also invited, right? I'm just wondering, how is that different between dealing with the internationals and the locals?
You know, I would absolutely agree with you, Per. I think dealing with investors in general is the land of the poker face. Again, you wouldn't know and wouldn't understand what the feelings and the emotions are on the other side, which is always very difficult to navigate through. It's quite expected that the local scene have more, I would say, appreciation to who we are as an organization. And that was very evident. It was pretty straightforward with the local scene. Whereas with the international scene, this is where I'd say we've been educated as well. We received questions that really helped us shape who we are as an organization today. Some of these questions were very strategic, very well thought of. We've had answers to those questions, but nonetheless, I think it helped us continue to investigate and explore our future as an organization. So I would say the level of appreciation of who we are locally was there, and it was kind of a low-hanging fruit. But nonetheless, when it came to the international scene, it was more of a steeper hike for us.
One of the stories in the IPO, I mean, the equity story, was the change from being what, as you described, as a local domestic stock exchange to being a group, and growth opportunities within Saudi Arabia. And then maybe there were some questions about growth opportunities outside. What's been the strategy in terms of, again, becoming a group rather than an exchange?
I think becoming a group is, I would say, twofold. First fold being we wanted to build top-class autonomous capital market infrastructure. There are three entities today that are the backbone of who we are as a capital market, namely the Saudi Exchange, Muqassa, and ADA. And I think separating those three companies from each other, them having their own governance standards and them having their own capitalization, has helped us in the second fold, which is globalizing and attaining international investors. When international investors look at a sophisticated module that looks the way we look today, given, of course, that we also operate top-notch technology behind this infrastructure, and this, I think, is a very important or is a very nice way for me to segue to the second fold, which is globalization. Fold one was to kind of have a very solid backbone to who we are as an organization. And then fold two was to globalize. And globalize as a platform, and I think we've achieved that. If you look at the number of international investors that have joined our QFI program, we think that we have captured the vast majority of global asset managers in their interest and towards the kingdom and our capital market. And we continue to evolve globally from a product offering standpoint. So there's unbelievable ambition when it comes to becoming a capital connector from east to west and becoming a cross-listing hub. And this is a hurdle that we will very soon overcome and very soon start to illustrate factual results, and factual results being translated into cross-listings from all over the world and towards the kingdom. There's a great ambition for us as a group to further evolve our product offerings, that being, of course, illustrated, for example, in our non-organic strategy. Quite recently, we've made a couple of acquisitions with a data acquisition, a commodity acquisition. That shows you that the group is expanding its current product offerings locally and internationally, but also venturing towards other products and services that have not been part of the mix in the past.
Now, on the listing side, you ran the listing group for 5 years or?
Eight.
8 years. It was quite a big change, right? When we talked to you, as you said, you moved from 4 IPOs per year to 40 IPOs per year on the run rate. Some on the main market, some on Nomu. And Saudi Arabia has been a bright spot and in an otherwise quite dull IPO market the last 3 years. Can you just talk through a bit the trajectory and how things change over this eight-year period?
When I first joined, you're absolutely right. The average was 4 or 5 IPOs per annum. And that was immediately, and of course, there was a level of, I would say the right word is a level of urgency, not in capital markets, but I'd say in the kingdom. The vision that the kingdom had, Vision 2030, of course, spearheaded by the Crown Prince, capital markets were not in isolation. He had a very close eye to what's going on in capital markets. And His Royal Highness believed that capital markets will play a very important role as a kickstarter and an accelerator to everything that happens in the kingdom.
Is that role driven by, is it the infusion of capital into companies, into opportunities, or is it more about how the public markets can sort of help companies professionalize and think more actively about their business?
I think it's, again, you can look at it from two angles. Angle one is more on the, I would say, financing side of things. So if you look at corporates, and capital markets are one of the most evident ways for corporates to, further finance themselves, whether primary or on secondary basis. And the second angle, which is sometimes slightly ignored, which is the indirect benefits of going public and the impact that has on continuity, governance, better decision making, transparency, and how that absolutely slay any sort of decision-making processes in the past that kind of directed companies towards the wrong direction. So it was basically financing and the impact of governance on corporates. And taking a step back towards the story of how we went from 4 to 40 to 50 to 60, it was basically there was an eye on capital markets and there was an ambition. I think back then when we were told to that the ambition was to get to 20, 30, 40, 50, and there was a very clear-cut KPI schedule to that. I'll be very honest with you, people thought that those numbers were a little bit crazy, unachievable. And if you look to where we are today, I would say 20 and 30 are unacceptable. And we think that there's still a lot more of room for us to continue to plow through corporates in the kingdom that can be part of public markets. Despite everything that has happened, from a statistical standpoint, from the number of corporates registered to their size, of course, to the number of those part of public markets, there's still a long way to go. And the kingdom is evolving with new sectors and new businesses being created by the day. So this is not a capped space of corporates. It's a space that is growing by the second and growing by the day. And the potential for us to continue to evolve our IPO pipeline, which is very healthy at the moment, is very much up for grabs.
How do you convince these companies then to list? Because we see across the world that there's quite a lot of companies that don't feel the need to list, right? Maybe they're very profitable, family-owned companies. They don't necessarily need to raise capital for external growth, and they don't need to list for inheritance or whatever. So how do you go about this and convince companies that they should actually be listed?
So I would say there's always, and again, if you look at arguments in life, people that stand with different sides of sides of the argument. I'm very biased. I'm a huge fan of going public and being public. I think it's a great way for companies to sustain themselves. A very understated branding and visibility tool. And I think that is very well proven over the many years of capital market history. So there's that very classical sitting down with a company, planting a seed, making sure they understand what IPOs are. I would say 8 years ago, the questions were many from companies. Not many understood the process. Not many understood why they should go public. And I think today the level of education has very strongly improved and everyone kind of understands why we should go public. One point that cannot be ignored is that we've worked with various government entities to support and introduce government incentives that helped companies go public. I think this is a very important point.
What shape do those incentives take?
I'll give you an example. one of these incentives, I think very relevant, is preferential treatment in government procurement. So if you are a corporate that is listed and you're bidding for a government contract, and as I'm sure all of us know, you know, government contracts are still a significant portion of business in the kingdom, and you're bidding against several other non-listed companies, you do get preferential treatment in case, you know, technical qualifications are equal, financial qualifications are more or less equal, listed companies do prevail for their governance, transparency, et cetera, et cetera. And that's written in procurement rules, which I think is very, very significant.
Exactly. No, but it's a good point, right? You say transparency equals sort of better contract, I mean, better governance, better public procurement. So everybody benefits, right?
Yeah. Another incentive that we all know that Saudi operates a vast ecosystem of development funds, whether tourism development fund, the industrial development fund, et cetera, et cetera. Corporates get a different financing cap being public. Again, why? Because of their governance and transparency.
No, it's very interesting. I don't think this is very common, actually. I can definitely see it, it helping develop public markets. I don't know if you read the Jamie Dimon's CEO letter they published last week. And one of the things he points to is the difficulty of being a public company because, of course, you have higher disclosure requirements and how your governance is organized and maybe a too automated way of doing shareholder and governance work. But this point about disclosure is definitely important in public markets, but maybe some corporates don't feel that they get anything back from it. They get a diversified shareholder base, but maybe that's it.
Yeah. You know, pointing out to uniqueness and disclosure, there's one thing that I think is very well worth noting is how companies in Nemo disclose. So I think that's quite unique in Nemo. Companies disclose on semi-annual basis. So I think that kind of addresses the point that Mr. Dimon tried to make. Yes, it's difficult sometimes for corporates to comply with coming out publicly, disclosing every quarter. It gets a little bit difficult to corporates sometimes focusing on that and at the same time trying to focus on their core business. But for smaller and medium-sized enterprises, we took that into consideration. We felt like we wanted to give them a little bit more of breathing space. And I think that, alongside the introduction of direct listings in Nemo, Nemo is the small and medium enterprise platform. Nemo translates for the word growth in Arabic. I think both semi-annual disclosure and direct listings, that helped, you know, propel the number of listed corporates on Nemo tremendously.
And as you've internationalized the exchange, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, it was quite difficult to access the Saudi markets as an international investor. Now it's much easier. Have those disclosure requirements changed? Or what were your expectations of what corporates should disclose to the investors? Has that changed in the process?
You know, just 2 points that you've mentioned here are quite interesting. I think, yes, if you look at it from an investor standpoint, you know, and I'll take myself back to the days I was at Morgan Stanley on the sales and trading desk, it was very difficult to access the Saudi capital market. Swaps and P-notes, it cost the client a fortune. Brokers at the moment are hating me for saying that, but it still is a little bit expensive, to be honest. But nonetheless, I think back then it was very expensive. We kind of limited the number of asset managers that were willing to take that, if I may say, risk. And of course, not ignoring FX as well, and not ignoring trading hours and trading days, and the lack of overlap between international markets and the kingdom. So all of that was not playing in favor of Saudi. And I think if you look at that picture and you look at it today, it's not the same place. Trading hours are different. Trading days are different. They've introduced a QFI program. Trading Saudi as an international is as close as it gets to trading the market locally on cash basis. Top-notch infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. Are there further improvements that can happen? Of course. Nonetheless, I think if you look at what the market is today and comparing it to where it was 8, 9, 10 years ago, it doesn't look like the same market, which is something that is very well noticed by everyone. And this is what helped us become an emerging market with significant weight as a country. If you look at disclosure and how companies evolved, I think Saudi has always been on the overly transparent side of the fence. If you look at the most recent, I would say the 2023 report that came from the World Bank assessing different countries from a various metric standpoint. If you look at governance, Saudi is always a top three country. We're always very, very strict when it comes to governance. And I think from a disclosure standpoint, we sit at a very solid, very reliable position. I think there's a will amongst everyone, especially from our regulator, to try and maintain that position as much as they can, because we feel like this is a major selling point to investors locally and globally. People want to see more information.
One item where international investors require more and more information is on the ESG side. Has that changed any within Saudi?
No, I know that ESG is a very important topic globally, and we take this very seriously at the Saudi Exchange more particularly. And there's a fantastic team at the Saudi Exchange that is, you know, spearheading this side of capital markets, and how we make sure that, of course, we push corporates in Saudi to further disclose on ESG, and of course, lead by example as an organization, and make sure that we, as the Saudi Tadawul Group, push the ESG narrative. This is not something that is going to be solved for in a fortnight. It will take some time. I recall my personal experience with investor relations. When I first joined, investor relations was a hurdle, and we did not have the right level of investor relation representation from corporates in the kingdom. Everyone at the organization being the group, the Saudi Tadawul Group, realized that when we become an EM market, we will be put on a stage with the lights all on us, and we need the right voice. And we need to make sure that corporates have solid IR capabilities to make sure that they can tell the Saudi story at best. It took us some time, but I think if you look at where we are today from an investor relations standpoint, I think there's a lot more appreciation to that profession and to the importance of that role. Corporate access has tremendously improved. We also feel like we've contributed towards corporate access. I know, Per, I saw you in the moderated a session in the Saudi Capital Market Forum. And that forum, in essence, is not just a platform for people to attend panel discussions, but it's a platform for investors to see corporates. The numbers that come out of that forum are quite astonishing in terms of number of meetings and number of corporates participating. And we're taking 30 Saudi corporates to Hong Kong on May the 9th to see investors in that part of the world. And the whole Capital Market Forum brand name is going to continue to spread its wings across the world to try and spread the word. So for us to go from no investor relations, I wouldn't say no investor, that's very harsh, but saying no strong penetration of investor relations amongst the Saudi listed corporate community to where we are today in terms of being at an acceptable level of sophistication, still more room to improve, of course, is the same, I think, journey that we will be taking when it comes to ESG. Right? We're taking strides year in, year out. We have guidelines out for corporates to kind of go through and adhere to. And I'm sure the team will continue to push that narrative as strong as they can.
One of the goals of the Financial Sector Development Program has been to broaden the shareholder base of Saudi companies. Do you feel this has been achieved, and what's left to do in that respect?
If you look at the Saudi market, there's two ways to look at this. I would say investor demographics is one side of looking at it. And another side of looking at it is looking at it from the lens of free float. So if you look at demographics, we are a retail-dominated market. And for us to change that, it will take a lot of time. Are we taking steps towards institutionalizing? Absolutely. From IPO allocations to the development of the asset management world, to regulations across the board, it's all in favor of institutionalizing the market. And with that, we're not trying to discount retail by any way or form. They are a very important engine. But I think the motto is to try and make sure that there is a bigger base of capable investors. And we've also launched a program called Invest Wisely. And the whole goal of that program is to make sure that people invest wisely into the market. So you either are capable enough to invest yourself or go through institutional channels. From an investor demographic standpoint, we barely moved the needle over the last 5 years, 6 years. And if that demographic is to change, and I'm on the camp of, I think it will change, but it will take a lot of time. We're heading towards that, but not at top speed, because I don't think top speed can be achieved. Investor demographics are part and parcel of who we are as a nation, culture, and changing that and reversing that, not necessarily do we think we need to do that, but the natural progression towards institutional will happen, but will happen at a slow pace. If you look at it from, you know, a free float standpoint, going back again to metrics measured by the World Bank and other entities, we're up there. you know, I would say the top decile of markets from a free float standpoint. And there's a lot of efforts, without going into the nitty-gritty details, of further improving those figures by corporates that are executing on secondary basis, making sure that that number continues to improve. And I think the motto of the reason why that's happening is there's a strong belief of putting more shares available for investors to be able to access. With that, the pace is a little bit more quicker, if I may say.
You mentioned the growing free float, and I know it's still been a bit challenging to execute, for example, follow-on offerings in the kingdom. But I think you've also made some reforms in that space. Do you want to share a bit how that's evolving?
I think that whole concept, and I'm going through the details of that, might require a separate podcast. But I think that whole side of transactions is something that is new to us as an organization, as a capital market, I would say as well. And I would say very proud of how we've approached this with a very open mind and a very dynamic stance. A stance that saw us kind of go through trial and error approach. We tried a couple of ways of actually executing on follow-ons. And then the Capital Market Authority came out with regulations last year. I think we've reached a level of maturity in those kind of transactions very, very quickly. And the reason why I think that has happened is because of the importance of those transactions and the role they can play in further developing capital markets.
I think it's quite important, especially when you start having companies that might be more PE-backed or VC-backed coming out, where actually the IPO is just one step and you need to reduce the ownership of some investors over time. Maybe less necessary if you have a family-owned company where the idea is to list 25% and then stay like that for 20 years, right?
Yeah, I would say families are more emotionally attached versus PEs and VCs more emotionally attached to exits. And yes, you cannot exit everything one go in an IPO sometimes. So you need sometimes other venues to do so.
In the case of Americana, for example, you launched the first dual listing between Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And you mentioned you expect to see more of that type of transactions coming over time. What should we expect there?
I think one thing that people need to understand and correctly estimate is that cross listings are exercises that are done on country to country basis. So there is regulatory harmonization that needs to take place, which cannot be underestimated because we live in 2024. Nothing is manual anymore. Everything is automated. So the netting process is fully automated between both markets. And for you to achieve that technical linkage and the regulatory harmonization, it sometimes takes more than expected. And we've seen that between other markets as well. We've seen many European, Asian links being formed, and it took years for that to be developed. Once that link is developed, you can think of that as a bridge with a toll system. It might take time to build that bridge. It might be a little bit frustrating to look at the bridge being built. But once the bridge is up and running, it's very seamless both ways. I can assure you that there are bridges being built. I think it's not a secret. And I think some of these bridges are very close to being ready. Some of these links are very, very close to being ready. But once you have these links fully mature, I think then Saudi and the Saudi capital market can fully unleash its potential to be a bridge between East and West from a capital.
Personally, what are you most excited about in terms of future listings in the kingdom? Any sectors or themes you're excited about?
I think we've done a very good job. I think, and people don't give us enough credit for the diversification that we've achieved in the past from a listing standpoint. It's not just numbers. But if you look at the concentration of the market, still dominated by petchems and banks and petchems. If you look at the listings that we've made happen over the last 5-6 years, I would say 98% of them are away from these sectors. And we've introduced and unlocked various sectors that weren't part of the market in the past. In the last decade, hospitals came into play, schools came into play, e-commerce came into play. I think that's very important. If I may say, as an outsider at the moment, someone looking from the outside, I would love to see, and I'm excited to see, the recently developed sectors in the kingdom taking shape and form in capital markets. I'd love to see tourism. I'd love to see entertainment, gaming. Because if you look at the day-to-day lives of who we are as young Saudis, that's who we are and that's what occupies our time. And I'd love to see some of those successes packaged and readied to be part of capital markets. And I think that's very much achievable. And adding to that, I don't know how I forgot this, but I'm a very huge sports enthusiast. And there's a lot of traction happening from a sports standpoint. And it would be a dream come true as a Saudi to see some of the sports institutions in Saudi being publicly listed. I think that's going to be very fun. Though globally, I think sports and specifically football institutions have never proven successful as publicly listed companies.
They tend to be retail favorites. So it goes a bit against the institutionalization part, right?
Not only that, they tend to prefer lack of disclosure, if I may say. But nonetheless, I think there isn't much traction from a sports standpoint and specifically football globally. But if I had to be very selfish and I had to answer that question very selfishly, I would say I would love to see sports being part of the market. But also as well, I think there's many exciting sectors that are being unraveled in the kingdom. And I think it would be impossible to imagine the Saudi capital market in the next 5 years or so not having those sectors playing a very important role, a very important part of Saudi capital market.
Any fun facts you can share from the Tadawul IPO?
For everyone that's going through an IPO, and this is probably a message to, not to the advisors, but maybe to the project team, to the people that are on the side of the fence where things are being managed from the corporate standpoint. Be patient, stay sane. It gets tough sometimes. In life, there are certain exercises and projects that can afford a delay or two, can afford a slip or two. And I know that with IPOs, that's not the case. You want everything to be flawless and you want everything to be absolutely on time. Delays mean issues, problems, mistakes are times a thousand.
Especially when you're the stock exchange, right?
Exactly. But maybe to everyone in the world, I think not a fun fact, but I would say no matter what happens, stay calm.
Stay more calm and carry on.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Naif, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Per. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to IPO Stories. In future episodes, we'll host CEOs, CFOs, advisors, and other participants in the IPO process to learn from their experience, like from Naif today. If you like the show, please follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and share the show with people around you. If you have questions about the IPO process that you'd like us to address with future guests, please get in touch at contact@ipostories.com and follow the LinkedIn account, Amundsen Investment Management.